Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Republican Mike DeWine took the oath of office in a private ceremony shortly after midnight tonight to become the 70th governor of Ohio. And he got right to work signing six executive orders, including one that renews and expands an order for anti-discrimination protections.
That you cannot discriminate against someone because of pregnancy. You cannot discriminate against someone because they have a young child in employment, or you cannot discriminate against someone because they are a foster parent.
He did not mention in those remarks his inclusion of gender identity, but that is included in that list. Joining us now for our weekly reporter roundtable, Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. Welcome back, Joe.
Great to be here.
And Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So he reactivated an anti-discrimination policy, adding gender identity, pregnancy, parents with young children, foster parents as protected classes. He didn't mention gender identity in that recorded comment. How big of a deal is that? Joe Ingles?
Well, it's a big enough deal that a lot of the groups who represent gay populations and transgender populations are saying, hey, this is a big deal for us. This is something we've wanted. It was something that was there before under Governor Kasich, and this continues it. And by not, you know, coming right out and talking about it, he probably, you know, I don't know why that was, but, you know, when you read through it, it's clear that the language is there.
It's a long list. Yeah, Jesse?
Yeah, so just to be clear, this applies to state employees. So if you're in a private sector job, this actually doesn't protect you. And that is something that people are bringing up because there has been legislation before Ohio lawmakers to address that that really hasn't gone anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for state employees, what this would do would extend what John Kasich did in kind of his final days as governor to protect gender identity, sexual orientation, gender, age, et cetera, were already in there. But that would protect those people. And then the three things that DeWine added was pregnancy, foster parents, and parents of young children.
I would just add, when it comes to the private sector, the fact that government has these protections in place sets a standard for the private sector to perhaps it definitely could help legislation in this area
down the road.
Yes.
Now, when Governor Kasich took office, he deleted gender identity from the protections. What was his explanation for returning it in the first place? And I guess I'm kind of surprised that Mike DeWine made that a priority as well.
Well, I think, you know, here's the thing. You know, state government, as you just said, sets the example. And when you're trying to bring businesses, you're trying to bring highly skilled workers into government and have them work in areas where they can actually affect change for the better for the state. A lot of times those people are from gay populations. They need that protection. And I think that it's as much a business. There's as much a business. The wheel of looking at this as there is, you know, anything else.
Right, because a lot of references to Ohio now, given this last round of elections in November, is as a conservative state.
Right.
It's being called a red state, right. At least to the naked eye. There's a lot of analysis that you can do and parse, but all things being equal, it's considered conservative now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think John Kasich came out and said this, but I do think opinions on LGBTQ individuals have been changing since 2011 to 2018, 2019. And I think, you know, across the board, it was seen as more acceptable to include gender identity, whether it should have been there the whole time. Certainly people will argue, but I think it's less, you know, political nowadays to keep that rolling.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. You just heard from Jesse Ballmer, state government reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Also with us, Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch and Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Questions or comments? It's inauguration day. We're talking a lot about that today. Questions or comments? 614-292-8513. Yeah, Kathy Kandisky.
Well, the other thing I was going to point out is the governor also had executive orders creating the Governor's Children's Initiative and an anti-drug Governor's Recovery Ohio Initiative to fight the opioid crisis, drug crisis in general. I think those two things in particular kind of show us what his priorities are going to be. He's talked quite a bit about both those issues. the idea that he had executive orders in those areas, you know, within hours of taking office, I think is pretty significant and tells us what his focus is going to be.
It's definitely a different tack now. We're not in the Kasich era anymore. This is more traditional that a governor sets forth their policies. Governor, in this way, Governor Kasich did it in the budget. It's clear that Governor DeWine is going to say, here's what I want to do. And I guess the implication is, and I want to work with the legislature to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, in setting these executive orders, you know, he can put it in motion before the legislature even has to do anything.
What about funding, though?
Things well, you like would that. Expect. I mean, you mentioned his budget, which I think he has to propose by March, the end of March, maybe beginning of March, sometime in March. I think his budget will reflect these priorities as well, but I think he's hitting the ground running by especially this anti-drug that, you know, he's setting up a person in charge of coordinating the state's anti-drug efforts. So I think he's hitting the ground running on these issues, but I think you're going to see funding exactly where he wants funding to go in his budget, especially when you talk about the children's issues. You know, he's talked a lot about public preschool, all day K, you know, social services to kids in need, you know, young children. I think those things you'll see in the budget as well.
He created the Governor's Recovery Ohio Initiative, put one person, Alicia Nelson, in charge of coordinating the state's anti-drug effort. Of course, this isn't the state's anti-drug effort, all things being equal. There's other elements. There's other agencies. It's not cabinet level. What kind of staying power and impact can it have, Joe Ingles?
Well, I think he sees the Recovery Ohio program as part of a drug issue, but also a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. And if you look at who he's putting on the front lines, one, he's put on Lori Criss, who was with the Recovery Council or with the council that operated all of the treatment facilities, represented the treatment facilities throughout the state. He's putting people in those areas where they have expertise and where they can bring some real knowledge as to how to treat people, how to get them, rehab, get them the rehab that they need. And also a lot, if you talk to Lori Criss, she'll tell you that a lot of the people who are being treated for drug issues also have mental health issues. So you can't really just treat one part and not the other. And I think that he's seeing that correlation. He's trying to put people in there who have the knowledge to do the things that will get the most bang for the buck and be the most helpful to people who need the help right now.
And you're talking about Lori Criss, who DeWine named the director of the Department of Mental Health and Addiction
Correct.
Services. He also named another veteran, Maureen Corcoran, as head of Medicaid. And I think those two in particular will be working hard on this issue.
Right.
But establishing a point person above it, it kind of reminds me a little bit about what Governor Kasich did with the health, with his Greg Moody, director of health policy. I forget the name of it already.
Health transformation.
Thank you. That kind of oversaw a bunch of efforts on the health care
front. To create
front.
Efficiency, especially in Medicaid, right?
Correct. Yeah. So we might see something like that with this position as kind of overseeing and coordinating the drug effort and mental health as well, as Joe mentioned.
Let's see, Dan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dan.
Hi, this is Dan, the artist formerly known as State Representative Dan Stewart.
Dan Stewart. Hi, Dan.
And thank you guys for the work you do to keep people informed on these kinds of issues. I just wanted to comment a little bit on the Equal Housing and Employment Act, the discrimination on the GLBT. We did pass it in the House. I mean, when I first started introducing it, I may have had five or six sponsors, and eventually I think I had probably 40 sponsors, including a Republican joint sponsor and quite a number of Republican co-sponsors. And we did pass it in the House, but could not get a hearing in the Senate. We had the votes in the Senate. There were a couple of folks that were just dug in about it. But I think it's about the spelling miss. It didn't mean, you know, that you could Klinger could come dressed, you know, in drag one day at work. It just added that you can't fire somebody solely on the basis that they're GLBT, just like they couldn't fire somebody because they just found out they're African American or Jewish. It wasn't.
So that law didn't pass
in the House. But we never did get a hearing because there was somebody holding it up, and we counted. We had the votes in the Senate, too.
Okay.
So I think things have changed a great deal over time. And it's the same thing with the mental health that I worked on, too, the mental health parity bill. It just takes a little bit of time because we finally started having large. Like Cardinal Health come and testify and other businesses.
Yeah.
In Columbus, being kind of known as an open city, gay friendly, has benefited by it. And then I think a lot of business-minded people started seeing that as well. And once that we dispelled a lot of the myths and stigmas about it, it wasn't special rights. It's just the same rights that anybody else has.
Yeah.
It kind of broke through, and people who were vehemently against it at one point came along. So I think you guys were right when you said, you know, the state kind of leads the way in lots of times. Ohio's not, you know, known across the country as a leader in that, but I think it does, and hopefully this will encourage those. And I know that there'll be people who will be introducing it, and hopefully they'll just go through the same, answer the same questions, and break the myths and stigmas about it.
Dan Stewart, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. Former State Representative Dan Stewart from Columbus talking about legislation that did get through the House, did not make it through the Senate. But Dan thinks that that might have had gone a long way in changing sentiments in the Ohio General Assembly. Ergo, now Governor Mike DeWine's decision to include gender identity in a list of protections at the executive level in state government. We will continue our conversation. It is Inauguration Day in Ohio, and we're talking about all of that and more today on our weekly reporter roundtable with Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio, Statehouse News Bureau. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. It is Inauguration Day. The governor and the lieutenant governor, I believe maybe others, were sworn in officially at the crack of dawn, or not even the crack of dawn, at just after midnight. Mm-hmm. The ceremonial reenactments, as we're calling them, take place later on today. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Kathy Kandisky of the Dispatch, and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio, Statehouse News Bureau. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a new Speaker of the House.
We do.
Raise your hands. Were you surprised at the outcome?
I was.
Yeah.
I think if you would have asked me a week before, I would have been very surprised. That Friday before, Democrats started making clear that the majority of them were going to support Larry Householder. And I thought that that could be the way it went. But and that is what happened on Monday.
He's a familiar name, right? Kathy Kandisky.
Right. He's been speaker before, and I'm trying to remember what year it was.
I think 2003.
Yeah.
2001 through 2004.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those of us that have been around a while were, I think, a little more surprised because he kind of had a reputation as being kind of heavy-handed and left kind of under a cloud, FBI investigation, ethics investigation, although he was never charged with anything. So some of us were a little surprised, but I think he showed us once again what a skilled politician he is and how he was able to build, you know, a coalition. He actually ended up with less Republican votes than Ryan Smith. So it'll be interesting to see how he puts that Republican caucus back together.
What do Democrats expect for that kind of, I don't know if loyalty is the right word, but at least that kind of support at the outset?
You know, the union got behind Larry Householder.
The organized
the
labor.
Unions, yes. The unions were out there and they were getting behind Householder. And of course, the Democrats, they get a lot of support from the unions. In fact, that's probably their biggest base of support, I would imagine. And so anyway, they were the unions were telling the Democrats, hey, you need to get behind this guy. Now, we don't know exactly. You know, I don't think that there's a list that's signed. of everything that they that was
were
talked
promised.
About. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I they had talked about anti-labor kind of legislation, like the right to work bill that keeps coming up, and
which
ideas.
Is an anti-labor
right.
union,
anti-labor yeah. union thing. Apparently, there was a kind of a promise that was made. Hey, we'll keep that at bay. We won't do that. And they were promising to give. And Larry Householder said this, that he really wants to put Democrats in positions where they can make more changes, because the Democrats have really, they've been so far outnumbered, they don't even have a voice in a lot of things. Sometimes things are done behind the scenes. They all come in with their votes decided, and it doesn't really matter what the Democrats do.
Because they don't have enough to make a difference.
Right, right. So now the Democrats, there's like three subcommittees that they're going to have one Democrat and one Republican chair those subcommittees. Now the Democrats are going to be able to propose their amendments and have discussion on them instead of just immediately shutting them down and tabling them. You know, there's a lot of places where Larry Householder is saying, I want to work with Democrats on some of these issues and come up with something that's more bipartisan, that has some more oomph to it. So, I mean, you know, when you hear him talk about why he wanted the Democrats, what he did to get the Democrat support, You realize that there were a lot of things that were said to Democrats to promise them things. I'd really like to know if everything goes as planned.
Well, right. I mean, the Democrats are still wildly outnumbered, but this went further to splinter the Republican caucus in the Ohio House, did it not, Jesse Balmer?
Yeah. So I think actually the vote showed divisions in both the Republican and the Democratic caucuses on Monday. Republicans, 34 of them, voted for Ryan Smith, who was the former speaker, and 26 of them voted for Larry Householder. So obviously that shows some divisions there. On the Democratic side, 26 Democrats voted for Larry Householder and 12 voted for Ryan Smith. And on Friday, Fred Strayhorn, the minority leader on the Democrats' side, announced that he was going to resign his leadership position at the end of the month. Bridget Kelly, who also voted for Ryan Smith, said that she would resign her leadership position at the end of the month. And so you're really seeing how Householder and the union support for Householder is kind of flexing its muscle in the Ohio House right now. What's going to be really interesting is Larry Householder right now has support from 26 Republicans and 26 Democrats, some of the most conservative members in the Ohio House and some of the most liberal members in the Ohio House. So what types of bills are those people going to agree on? I think it might be fine for the budget, but when the heartbeat bill comes up, what does that look like?
Right. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
What are the Democrats are going to have a say, more of a say. But what's really unclear and I would say doubtful is it going to mean anything substantive in terms of change?
And the other thing is, when you think about this, what happens in the next election? I mean, because basically you've got these unions that are going out supporting Householder.
They're supporting something to stop something from happening.
Right.
They're not supporting something to generate action.
But are they going to have, I mean, where are they expected to give their money, for example? How do the campaigns
operate? Well, I wonder
operate?
If that came up into conversations with the Democrats saying, if you want our support going forward, you'll support
I would
Householder
bet it did.
Speaker.
I would bet
but
that it did. But
they,
we don't
no one
know
has
exactly.
Said that.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know exactly. But, you know, it's going to really be interesting to see where that union money goes and how it's split up and how who gets the backing of, you know, the influential groups and people that could help them. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see all that.
I also think Larry Householder, if he's smart and he's proven that he is, he will immediately start trying to shore up his support among the Republicans. He has a lot of committee assignments to dole out. Mm-hmm. And if you take some of Ryan Smith's people and give them some spots and, you know, encourage them into the fold, the more Republican support he has, the less he needs the Democrats. And I think that will be interesting how many of the Democrats' promises are fulfilled. We have no reason to expect they won't be, but I just think there's no guarantee.
About rewarding the Republicans who supported him? I think you make a really good point. It'd be very politic, wouldn't it, if he were to spread the wealth even among those who didn't support him. But I'm just wondering, what about the ones who did?
Well, I think one of the things he's done that I think is probably a really good sign is he's said he's going to meet with each member of the House to find out what their priorities are. So he can do some fence mending in those meetings for sure. And if obviously pushing forward agendas by some of the folks that didn't support him will help as well. We'll see what kind of stuff comes out of it.
Yeah, I think your all important committees like finance or like ways and means are going to be held by a householder supporter, as opposed to Ryan Smith's backers. But I think there are plenty of committees where you could, you know, put some folks who were loyal to Ryan Smith in those positions.
Yeah. I mean, the Republican caucus is arguably four people smaller than it was before the November elections, but it's still a lot to spread around among a lot of people. Not a lot to spread around among a lot of people in terms of giving them a piece of the action.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as Kathy said, they're meeting at the end of the month on this. He's meeting individually with lawmakers. They're also meeting at the end of the month on a retreat to try to kind of hash some of this out. So I think it'll be interesting who the leadership people are. I think it'll show a lot about what fences he's trying to mend or which alliances he's trying to shore up.
And he can also look to the governor and the Senate president as well to kind of form a coalition there. Those are all Republicans. Mm-hmm. If they, you know, they can set some agendas as well.
All right. So the Democrats have at least some kind of foothold in how things are getting done in the Ohio House, but not so in the Senate. The chances of anything changing there, that looks like it's pretty much status quo.
Yeah,
it
pretty much looks like a status quo right now.
Yeah. Larry Abhoff is
Senate president. The Senate has, as you said earlier, they've kind of been slower to react to some of these more controversial kind of things. I think that's probably the same. It's going to be, you know, going forward. I think one of the things that's really interesting right now is when you look at where Ohio is and where Ohio wants to go, how does it get there? How do you include millennials who are going to be paying the taxes so that older baby boomers can actually retire? I mean, how are you going to... Right now, Ohio is being considered by many a red state. It's being considered an older state. You've got a lot of baby boomers who are retiring, who are no longer bringing in the income to sustain the budget and all the things that you need in the state to make the state healthy. So how are our lawmakers going to look at embracing an agenda that includes everyone and makes younger people want to stay here, want to be part of the system, and contribute financially to keep the state healthy? I think that's going to be a big thing going forward for our state.
We were talking off air that we do live in a little bit of a bubble here in Columbus. It's prosperous. It's much more liberal. It's controlled by Democrats. And I guess the few other big cities are in the same kind of a situation. But the fact is that Ohio is bleeding youth.
Yes,
and has been for decades now.
Brain drain. It has been happening for a long time.
Right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So the ceremonial inaugural events take place today. There's parties and balls and whatnot. Is it what it once was, Kathy Kandiski?
It doesn't feel like it to me. I mean, it doesn't feel as much of the gala as it once was. But there were a lot of nice events. I mean, I think DeWine kind of set the tone for more of a family-centered focus with his event at the Space Museum in Dayton that was very much a family event. And I think that kind of set the tone for the whole thing. There's not a lot of late-night galas and things like that we've seen in the past where there might be multiple balls and things like that.
Right.
We're not seeing that.
Yeah. There's the Secretary of State, Attorney General, State Auditor, and State Treasurer are all going to be sworn in today.
Correct. I think most of them have. I think Dave Yost, the new Attorney General, was sworn in this morning. Mm-hmm. Keith Faber, I think, was sworn in actually yesterday in his hometown, as was Frank LaRose was sworn in his hometown.
Any sense about whether there are any big changes afoot in any of those statewide elective offices?
I do think one thing to watch now, Lieutenant Governor, former Secretary of State John Husted sent out these last chance notices to, I think, 275,000 individuals who had already received some notice that they would be removed from the rolls. And so if you get one of these, you should go to the online or to your local Board of Elections if you want to still vote and make sure you're registered. But in 30 to 45 days, there will be another removing of those people from the rolls who haven't voted in the last several federal elections. Frank LaRose has said he's wanted to either modify or end possibly that program. And so I think it's going to be interesting immediately what he does, because he has about a month, whether those people will remain on the voter rolls or whether they will be removed, a practice that the U.S. Supreme Court said that we could do.
Mm-hmm. The first budget out of the gate is the transportation budget, right? Am I right? And there's no money in it, or there's very little, not enough to build any new roads per se. Where does this stand as a priority going forward?
That's hard to tell. I mean, we're not hearing people talk a lot about it. I don't know. Maybe there's massive bake sales across the state or something.
kidding.
Or maybe talk of a tax increase.
Yeah.
Right. Gas tax.
Yeah, they might have to go with some sort of tax. You know, they had talked about a while back, like more of shifting more toward a usage kind of tax. There was some talk about that. And then it kind of got dropped and it didn't, you know, really follow
versus
through.
How many miles on your car,
right,
kind of a thing, versus fill up the tank.
Right. Yeah, so the people who used the state roads more would pay more for them and that sort of thing, and maybe assessing it more like a tax that you'd pay through your personal income, you know, maybe not an income tax, but something that you would pay, like that kind of system where you pay up front. Mm-hmm. And, right. But who knows? I mean, they talked about it and then they dropped it. So, but you could see them go back to revisit that. And they could, you know, just revisit the whole idea of a gas tax, another gas tax.
There's some kind of commission that's looking at this now, and I'm not really sure how it was appointed, but there's a group looking at it and it's coming up with ideas. I think infrastructure has to be a priority for our state. Without a good infrastructure, I mean, I cannot imagine we're going to move forward with just maintaining roads and not having new projects like a lot that we've seen here in Columbus. It's hard for me to fathom that it won't be a priority at some point.
One thing that Rich Cordray, the Democrat who was running for governor, proposed was floating like something like the Third Frontier, a bond issue, and have the state float such a bond issue that would deal with infrastructure. It would deal with, you know, not only the roads, but it would deal with bridges and public transportation, even maybe like fiber or internet kind of things. Things that would make Ohio, you know, more competitive in the job market and that sort of thing, when also it would be providing a lot of jobs and money into the economy. Basically, what it would do is just say that you're allowing the state to take on more debt, you know. But, you know, maybe they go down that path. Who knows? That was something that they looked at, but I don't think there's any consensus that they're going to do that.
Yeah. So. And one of the roots of the problem is Ohio's 28-cent gas tax hasn't been increased since 2005. Right. So 14 years, cars like I drive a Prius, you know, are becoming more gas efficient and using less of it. Also, the $1.5 billion that we approved for the Turnpike bond funding has run out. So I know no one likes a tax increase, but I do think this is something that Ohio lawmakers are going to have to take a look at in the transportation budget. And I think you could make the argument, hey, it's been 14 years. You know, it's time to take another look at this.
And gas prices are low now, which helps, too. I mean, people aren't paying as much for gas.
Right. So
that's kind of helpful.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to have to do something, though, this time around, or can they wait another 2 years for the next transportation budget?
If you would like new roads, probably not.
Okay.
If you would like to fill the potholes already in these roads, we might be able to make it.
Yeah. Potholes are a big issue. In about March, we'll be seeing a lot of potholes, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I can't even imagine having more potholes on, you know, going south of 71, south of Columbus. Uh-huh. I mean, that's just a mess out there. You nearly lose your car the way it is right now. A couple more years of that, I mean, we could, you know.
Yeah.
It's a mess. I mean,
roads
people are not
everyone.
Happy. Yeah.
I mean, roads affect everyone, all voters. I mean, I just don't see this as something they can ignore. And I really don't think they will.
Yeah. I also think you run the risk if you wait too long. We're always on kind of the cusp of that next recession. If you wait 2 years and the economic situation is worse, it just becomes that much harder to.
It does.
Well, I mean, speaking of that, the Ohio Bureau of Work, trust fund for unemployment compensation is, you know, filling up, but way below what it needs to be to weather even another year of a similar impact recession. Has Governor DeWine talked about that at all in this transition period going forward?
I'm not aware of Governor DeWine talking about it. I know Senate President Obhof mentioned that he's going to get at it this year.
It has to be done at the legislative level.
It has to be done at the legislative level. But the legislators have said every year for the past couple that they were going to do something and nothing ever happened. So I'm not overly optimistic. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, the Senate now has Kirk Schering, who is their resident unemployment compensation guru. He was heading this up in the House, and now he's over in the Senate. You know, it's just going to be a situation where both workers and businesses, laborers and business community are going to have to, you know, give up something. And no one likes to give up things. So,
and the lawmakers don't want to do anything. They want the two sides to come together and propose a solution, labor and business. And short of that, they don't want to tell labor and business what to do. So until the two sides come together, it's hard to see how it's going to get resolved. Huh.
All right. We are going to continue our conversation. It is Inauguration Day today in the state of Ohio. We have a new governor, new secretary of state, new auditor, new attorney general, new treasurer, and a couple new members of the Ohio Supreme Court to boot. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Jesse Ballmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Kathy Kandisky of the Dispatch. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Governor DeWine is almost done, or correct me if I'm wrong, but he's made a lot of headway in appointing cabinet directors, is he not? I mean, and it's historic.
Yeah.
The numbers of women and minorities.
Right. It is. It is historic. And if you look at who he's actually nominating for these positions, most of them are very well qualified. I mean, you know, you look at their resume and they've done a lot of work in the areas that they're being nominated. It's not just someone that happens to be a friend, you know. So that's kind of refreshing because oftentimes we see, you know, political patronage take over and, you know, it's a big
a lot of experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time.
But this time it's experience that seems to be driving it.
What does the naming, you know, and the appointments that he's made so far, Jesse Ballmert, tell you about Mike DeWine's governorship?
Well, I think it is, we can't say it's the most diverse because you never know, but I think it's one of the most diverse cabinets in Ohio's history.
It's the most women?
Yeah. It's possibly the most women. There's a number of people of color on this board. which isn't to say there aren't DeWine loyalists on there. There are people he's worked with for years who have donated to his campaigns, who have been with him from the beginning. And you can see that one of two ways. Like, it's good to engender loyalty among your top people, or, you know, these are just the people who've been with him all along. So I do think you see a number of DeWine people in here. I think there's really only one person so far who is continuing on in the same position from the Kasich administration. So you don't see a lot of, like, Kasich people anymore. He really is refreshing this and putting new people on there. And again, I've spoken about it before, but I do think Dan McCarthy, who is a well-known, well-respected lobbyist heading up the legislative efforts, is going to be interesting. He's a registered Democrat who's well-respected by Republicans. And so I think that might send a signal to kind of the arch conservatives that, you know, his policies might be closer to the middle. But obviously he's made his stance well-known on access to abortion and that he would sign the heartbeat bill. So it'll be interesting how that shakes out.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that happened toward the end of the Kasich administration was the revelations. Maybe it was obvious to, like, State House reporters, but that he hadn't talked to other statewide office holders in months, if not in some cases years. What's your sense about how this bench of statewide office holders is going to get along? Are they going to be communicative? Do they know each other? Do they care about what each other's doing?
I think you're going to see a much different relationship between the governor and lieutenant governor than you've seen in at least the last several years. Like, Mary Taylor, former lieutenant governor, said that she had not spoken with John Kasich in quite some time. They were in some meetings together about the budget, but that was about it. Whereas I think you'll see John Husted influencing a lot of state policy. He has this technology
Innovate Ohio
organization,
which is going to be more about jobs, but it looks like it's more about tech. Efficiency in state government.
Yeah.
Did we, a bunch of us, read that wrong?
I think that there's technological, looking at, you know, some of these technological things too that the state has talked about, you know, doing and which I guess does lead into efficiency, because if you can do it, you know, with tech, you're probably doing it cheaper. But I think that's more where they're headed with that.
Yeah.
I am kind of curious as to the role that Jobs Ohio will play in this whole thing now, you know, because that was basically a Kasich thing. And, you know, we never really have gotten the sense of what exactly Jobs Ohio means in terms of
getting
jobs.
Yeah, because we don't get to see the books.
We don't get to see the books. And, Jobs Ohio, most of these big projects, is kicking in money. But, you know, wouldn't the Ohio Department, you know, of Development have, which preceded it, you know, wouldn't that have kicked in money too? You really just don't know. So yeah. I'm kind of anxious to see, you know, how that's treated with this new administration.
Well, speaking about the relationship with the lawmakers, I think DeWine's bound to get along better with the lawmakers because he's more conservative than Kasich was. Kasich had differences with the legislature, starting with Medicaid expansion. That was a huge division they had. DeWine's more conservative. I think he'll get along better with the lawmakers. I think they'll agree on a lot more points, and he's not as much of a flamethrower, perhaps, as Kasich is. He's a lot more measured in his approach, a lot more diplomatic at times.
He's not going to say Kasich
can be kind of gruff.
Get run over.
Get on the bus or get run over.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he'll say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think Mike DeWine and the legislature are in a bit of a honeymoon period, for lack of a better term. They're going to be giving each other a little bit of latitude. They promised to meet regularly, which is something that John Kasich did at the beginning of his administration and really didn't at all towards the end. I think Ohio's legislative leaders are just so excited to not be constantly fighting a veto battle that they're going to, you know, work with him pretty well. I think they'll hit snags in the budget, though. You're not going to see Mike DeWine's budget sail through without adjustments from the legislature.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I agree on that.
So the legislature didn't change that much in its makeup. It did change in leadership on the House side, as we've mentioned already. What do we see, sort of the same tack that has occurred over the last 8 years, the last four terms of the Ohio General Assembly? Do you see sort of the same approach then?
I think the Ohio House is so up in the air right now with the leadership changes at both the Republican and the Democrat level and this dynamic of, you know, does Speaker Larry Householder need the Democrats? And if so, that's going to change the type of legislation that goes forward. If he doesn't need the Democrats, then I don't think you're going to see much change. I think the big issues like restricting access to abortion will continue because this is still a Republican-controlled legislature. I think guns, they showed very little appetite for John Kasich's red flag law, and I don't think you're going to see Mike DeWine pushing that as hard. So as far as the policy that gets done, I think the House is really the wild card right now, but I think you'll see the same thing from the Senate.
Yeah, I agree. I think we just don't know exactly how things are going to pan out in the House because we're still kind of reeling from all this change and trying to figure out how, you know, what exactly that means. And so I don't know what we'll see.
One thing I think you will see, Larry Householder, the new speaker, has put an emphasis on fixing Ohio's school funding system and problem. It's something that he was very passionate about when he was speaker last time. And so I think he's going to put some emphasis on that again. There was a duo of Democrat and Republican lawmakers that were kind of studying this at the end of last year, and that could lead to some sort of legislation.
And it'll be interesting to see if DeWine joins in that effort, because with his emphasis on children's issues, particularly educational issues, they may find some common ground.
Did the issue of home rule, local control pop up at all? I was kind of wondering if Democrats who are, you know, gave Larry Householder his vote to be speaker were looking at changing that dynamic as well. Most Democrats come from bigger cities that are more impacted by this erosion of local control in the Ohio General Assembly.
Well, I think this is something that Mike DeWine, our new governor, has sat down with the Ohio Mayors Alliance, which was founded by Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, and then Dana Mayor Nan Whaley got together. They sat down with Mike DeWine in December, and basically John Cranley, the Cincinnati mayor's message was, please first do no harm. Like, just if you would like to help us, just stop hurting us by these attacks on home rule and them being able to set up their own laws. Obviously, that's something that the legislature has much more control over than the governor will. But that was his big message. And then, hey, if you want to help us with the local government fund after that, that would be great. But so I think that is a message that Mike DeWine has heard, at least. I don't know if that trickles down to the legislature. Mm-hmm. I know they've been, you know, eager to pass a lot of these recently.
But if you talk to some of the leaders in some of these smaller communities like the areas that Householder represents, right? Yeah. If you talk to them, they talk about their community and how they're really having a hard time because they don't have the income they need locally, and there's nowhere to get that income because, you know, a lot of their – I had one mayor tell me that his area, most people are living on Social Security, Medicaid, those sorts of things. So they're really isn't anywhere for them to tap into new funding. And they're going to be looking to the state to try to help them just maintain what they have, not even move forward, but just to maintain. And so that's something to watch.
There's real issues in some areas, like in Franklin County, we're really lucky because we have a levy for like children's services, a levy for adult services and things like that. Most counties in Ohio do not have revenue streams for those issues, and those are really gaping. You hear stories about in some counties how if there's an issue of elder abuse or something like that, it ends up going to the sheriff's department because they have no, you know, social services to support those things. The same types of things you hear on children's services as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they try and address those issues, because what's happened during the Kasich administration is local revenues have been declining. So what do they do to try and shore that up?
And, of course, in a lot of those rural areas, it's been disproportionately hit by the opioid epidemic. And that's a big issue with children's services. They don't have the economies of scale to even support these kids in their own counties. They have to move them out of their counties.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes they've even had to move them out of state.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised somebody hasn't sued over the fact that if you're a child in need in a county like Franklin County, you're going to get all the services you need, versus if you're a child in a county that does not have that kind of setup, you're out of luck.
Kind of the same issue as with school funding.
Equity, yeah.
Yeah. Equity, depending on where you live, depends on the kind of education you get.
Right.
Depends on the kind of safety services, you know, safety nets that are out there for people in need. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a few more minutes, so if you have a question, now's the time. All right. So we're at the beginning of a new session. We're at the beginning of five new executive offices. Changed Ohio Supreme Court. We haven't talked about that much. Two Democrats got on the court. Does that demonstrably change much of anything, or do you just still see the Republican majority as overwhelming?
Yeah, it's not going to change much, except we're going to maybe hear more dissent on some cases. But, you know, it's not going to it probably won't change much because you've still got so many Republicans on there.
I agree. The actual results will not be different, but the Democrats' rallying cry in recent years has really been building the bench and getting people into office. And after a year where really they only won Sherrod Brown's U.S. Senate seat and two Ohio Supreme Court seats on the statewide level, I think they're going to take the victories where they can.
Are you guys surprised, speaking of Sherrod Brown, at how much ink he is getting? Or does it just seem like that because we live in the state?
It seems like he's getting a lot of attention and a lot of interest.
Who cares what his haircut is, but
his haircut's getting, his dog gets
his
a lot of attention.
Back, by the way, I might add.
After all the years of people commenting on women's looks, I suppose comeuppance that we're talking about Sherrod Brown's hair.
He does seem to be getting some national attention, and I wonder if it's because he's different than some of the others that have been getting. I mean, he's not Elizabeth Warren, obviously. He's kind of more, you know, when you look at, he's a liberal. In his policies, but he comes off as more of a workers kind of person.
Someone old time Democratic,
like,
liberal.
Maybe more Biden-ish in some ways. And I think that is appealing to a certain sector, the Democratic Party in particular. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, who knows? It's hard to tell what the Democratic Party is going to. There's so many factions of it, and, you know, they all want something different. And if you look at different areas of the country and who they think should be, you know, the president, vice president,
right,
it just depends on where you are.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I look into my crystal ball, I think the Democrats in 2020 are going to be very similar to the Republicans in 2016. You're going to have a lot of candidates, and I think Sherrod Brown has a lane as kind of the Midwestern senator, as opposed to the lane for East Coast or West Coast, a liberal is pretty full right now.
Yeah.
But whether he'll be able to break through against these people who have been working on this for years, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, because as I think former Governor Kasich said in remarks recently, there's a lot of logistics to work out, a lot of money to raise, and a lot of meetings to be had.
And he just got out of a pretty bruising U.S. Senate race.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I think it's a discussion he's having with his family right now as to whether he wants to jump in again.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you said. And he's obviously trying to figure out how viable he's going to be in the race. And he can take his time kind of testing the waters. But he certainly, if the opponent on the Republican side is Trump, Sherrod Brown is pretty, I think, a pretty solid candidate because he could perhaps deliver some of these states that flipped to Trump last time around, some of these Midwestern states, Michigan, Ohio.
Because he agrees with Trump on some key issues, one of which is NAFTA and the trade and how it's managed. And that was a big issue for a lot of people in those states.
Mm-hmm. And I think he has some credibility. When you look at, like, the GM plant in Lordstown, Sherrod Brown was very aware of what was going on there, whereas when he had a discussion with the president, it was like, oh, they cut back another shift? That's interesting.
Well, and the whole Main Street versus Wall Street thing, if you look at where Sherrod Brown is on that, I mean, he's definitely on the Main Street side. And I think that people, when you talk to people, they feel like Sherrod Brown represents workers. And, you know, in fact, Dignity of Work, I think, was his slogan as he was coming out. Mm-hmm. So I think he's prepared to make that argument on a national level.
Yeah, he's keeping that one warm. Mm-hmm. Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here.
And Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, thanks to you as well.
Thanks as always.
And Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's it. It is Inauguration Day in Ohio, but not a ton of news. Maybe we'll find out next week if something's going to happen. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.